1 year ago. We open to the mirror of a small, grimy bathroom. In this first panel, we see the room in full detail through the mirror's reflection. The faded, dirt-smudged, off-white walls, the overflowing trash bin and pile of refuse scattered around it, the broken and leaking toilet in the corner, the empty toilet paper dispenser. From the right, we see someone about to step in the frame. Next panel, a girl, 14 years old, stares at her reflection. Her hands are placed on the sink in front of the mirror, perhaps to keep herself steady. She has shoulder-length hair that shimmers and changes color between panels. It is obviously unkempt, and in the same panel she runs her fingers through her hair, a thought bubble comments.
It's going to start falling out if I don't get a hot shower soon.
She wears a tight black tank top, with a red spiderweb design around the collar. It does nothing to hide the boniness of her arms and shoulders. She crosses her arms, as if trying to hide this from herself. And another thought bubble comments.
That jacket should go well with this. By the time I take it off, it won't matter anymore.
Her eyes are a stunning shade of blue, and we linger on a close-up of her pupils, wide, clean, and beautiful. Before pulling back in the following panel to reveal faded, day-old gray eyeliner, then fatigue, laden underneath her eyes, and finally, pulling back just a bit more, to see the makeup around her eyes begin to run with errant tears. Her expression then hardens, her lips tighten, and her brow narrows as she meets her reflection's look with anger and annoyance. Next panel, she wipes the tears from her eyes, smearing her makeup in the process, and the thought bubble comments,
"You're so ugly when you cry."
Cut to outside the bathroom. We now find ourselves in Horizon City's finest Arcadium. A sprawling complex dedicated to providing people with an endless supply of digital entertainment. Arcade cabinets line walls, holographic mascots beckon patrons to virtual attractions, and masses of people are gathered. The girl leaves the bathroom, now wearing a light jacket, and she walks through the crowds with her head lowered. Every now and then, she nearly stumbles. And as we follow her trek through the Arcadium, so too do her thoughts.
I'm gonna pass out if I don't eat and need food. Fuck these shoes. That pizza smells so good. I feel dizzy. Going to faint. Am I shaking? I hope I'm not too pale. I should go double check that I'm not too pale. Shit, is my hair falling out? I need to eat. I need to eat something. I feel sick.
And then it happens. She collides with a boy about her age, someone with blue skin, longer arms than a human would have, a mop of orangish hair, and standing a clear foot taller than her. She nearly collapses, but he stabilizes her.
Hey, sorry, didn't see you.
She looks up at him, taking notice of the way he's staring at her. Her thought bubble reads,
"Keep it cool, we can do this."
And she says,
No problem. I'm such a klutz. I should have been paying attention."
She makes a move to leave, but he calls out to her.
It's cool. Hey, is everything all right?"
Yeah. No, it's not. I was supposed to meet someone here for food, games, his treat, but he ditched me. My parents locked my credits. So now I'm stuck. I'm hungry and miserable and ranting to a good-looking guy who should be doing much more enjoyable things than listening to my sob story. I'm sorry."
With a cool guy grin, the blue-skinned dude approaches her and puts a comforting hand on her shoulder.
"My friends can live without me for a bit. Why don't I hook you up with some za? And if you need to vent, then, like, feel free to vent away. My name's Brugger."
Mary smiles and cups her hand over his.
"Really? A kind heart in a sea of apathy? Thank you."
Yeah, how are we going to open today?
The same way we always open, Alan. Raw and dirty.
Oh. Hot.
That sounds good.
Hello, Internet. Welcome to a Critically Accursed podcast where the plot's made up and the roles don't matter. I'm your host, Mr. Critically Accursed. Guys, settle in and let's tell a story. Joining me today are two real-life hormonal heroes, Alex and Alan. Say hi to people, I guess.
Hi to people, I guess.
Hi, people.
Nice. Perfect. Flawless. So is it true, the information I have, that you guys are actually real-life hormonal heroes?
Yes, for the moment, I'm still an essential worker. So yes, I am a hero, and I can be hormonal.
You poor, poor child. It's probably worth mentioning, listeners at home, that you might be listening to this somewhere around May 2021. We are currently recording it in November 2020. So we are way ahead of schedule on our recording.
Also, yay COVID.
Yeah, if that's still a thing in 6 months, I don't know. We'll find out. We'll get there. Maybe. Some of us, anyways.
Hopefully.
Yeah. So, today's issue is the first issue we're recording of Volume 2, or Season 2, the second part of our fancy little game of Horizon. And, how you guys feeling? How you doing today? Let's do a little bit of a check-in. Alan, tell me some stuff.
Stuff is going okay. I'm in grad school right now. I am getting my master's in teaching. So during the day, during the week, I am in high school helping to teach there. And then in the evening, I'm in grad school taking classes. So time for me is non-existent. Although I just had some projects due, which is why this is a great break.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to give you this outlet. And it's cool to know that you're working in a high school, because that probably really helps how much you're able to get in touch with the high school spirit for the character that you're playing.
You aren't wrong. It's also kind of like some of my students listen to like gaming podcasts, and I was very tempted to tell them about this one, and then I was like, that probably would be very inappropriate.
No, fucking plug.
Can you tell them about it right before you leave?
I can tell them about it when they graduate and or I'm not their teacher. I think that would be fine.
Nah, fucking plug it. Fuck ethics.
Alex over here, our number one fan,
you're damn
just demanding
straight.
You to plug it all day, every day.
I have them put in the goddamn announcements of that school.
You're only supposed to be a delinquent in game, Alan.
What's the fun of that? I'm method, Alan.
Great. Well, if any of Alan's students are listening to this at any point in the future, we say hi, I guess. Alan's great. I'm sure you know that. Enough about Alan. Alex, it's been a while since we last gamed. It's probably been fucking like a month or more since we last did Masks. What's up, man?
Oh, lots going on. I'm fucking leaving the awful church that I'm working at. And thankfully, I live in New York State, where a lot of online courses just became free thanks to the governor. So that's my plan.
Nice, nice. Anything interesting you're swinging into, or?
IT, because I can work from home.
You know what you should really do is you should focus on like audio engineering, doing a little bit of audio editing, you know, just you know, just taking up some classes on that, you know, no real reason. It's probably pretty interesting.
You know, I don't doubt they have them, and probably video editing too, Chris. Wink, wink, hint, hint, YouTube channel, cough, cough.
Yeah, wow, you could revive the YouTube channel all on your own, Alex.
Let's do this. We have a YouTube channel, by the way, with the same name as the podcast.
Sigh.
Critically Accursed. We got some real good shit on there.
It depends on your definition of real good shit. Great. I'm assuming both you and Alan are excited to play a little bit today, get back into the shoes of Tate Temple and Todd Tabor.
You are correct. And hopefully you get us right this time.
Nah, I just want to plug.
All day or day.
We gotta get that Raid Shadow Legend sponsor somehow.
Somehow. Great. Well, I think that was about 6 minutes of intro, so we can swing into this. We've done a little bit of talking. I've kind of set you guys up a little bit before we sat down to record today about some of the things we're going to do and where this is taking place. Obviously, our Volume 1 of Horizon ended with all of those crazy events from Remembrance Day. What follows is we have the other half of October. Basically, you guys have a little bit of downtime to kind of recover and see what directions your characters want to start walking in, having just experienced
a load of bullshit from Remembrance Day. The next big event that's coming up is at the end of the month, Horizon High is doing a Halloween dance for its students. And I'm mentioning this because it's the next big event, next big holiday, and it's probably definitely not anything important whatsoever. But we're counting down to it anyways. We're going to kind of just talk a little bit about what Tate Temple and Todd DeBoer are getting up to over the course of these next couple of weeks.
We ended with him standing silhouetted against the sun with Nathaniel in the background throwing up.
There's some that call him a fallen king. You know, some ancient decrepit thing once brimming with glory and power.
The next day starts with all of the background is going to be really, really dark. The colors are going to be super muted and dim. Tate and Nathaniel are kind of spotlit, gold and blue, respectively. In that first panel, when they're talking, it's clear that they're in Tate's bedroom.
Word on the miasma is the poor bloke hardly qualifies as human anymore.
From that first panel, it'll show him in school. It's still dark, like you see the shapes of everybody going around him. The features aren't filled in, and only he's in detail. In the panel next to that, you'll see him focus, and a person will come into focus also, and you'll see that it's Todd. Tate will look at him and then not say anything. And so the next panel will be him at home again with Nate, similar to the first panel, but the background won't be quite as dark.
Allegedly, he was cursed by the gods for a misuse of power, stripped of the artifacts he carried, and buried deep underground to fester in self-hate.
The next panel will be at school again. It's that same thing of him, like, looking in the crowd, and he sees, this time it's Skye, her Madison counterpart at school. You see him walking up to her, and then at the last minute, he just keeps going.
But enough history, mates. Bottom line, this wank is pissed, powerful, and I'd reckon at the beck and call of your, dark patron.
The next panel, actually, it's another one. But this time, when Todd comes into focus, you'll see a speech bubble with small words inside of it saying, like, hey. And then when Todd looks around, there's nobody there.
So, pop quiz, kiddo. You're staring down thousands of years worth of royal rage, all wrapped up nice and neat in mummy bindings. No organs, no breath. Twat probably doesn't even have eyes.
In the next panel, it's going to show one at home. You'll see him, like, sitting with his family, and, like, his dad is there, and everything is actually really bright. All of the colors are popping and vivid, and the entire family is there. But the panel right after that, you'll see him look towards where his mom is, and when he does that, everything is dim, because she still doesn't look at him.
The point of the matter, mates, is there's not an ounce of life to be found in the corpse. How do you kill that which is already dead?
And then you'll see probably the final panel, him at school, and this time he goes up to Todd, and the two of them are standing there with, like, people walking past. And he'll say something like, how are you doing? It's been a while.
A little better after the bruise is healed up.
I'm glad to hear that. Are you doing anything after school? Because maybe we could hang out.
What you thinking?
Have you been to the fall biodome lately? The colors are perfect. To look at the leaves and the light through it at sunset.
Is this a date?
This is not a date. This is what he does after school, and he has no idea how to talk to people.
Do we get, like, a quiet panel where Tate just, like, awkwardly looks down because he's not sure how to respond or something?
I think he's just like, is it a date? I've never been on a date. I didn't think Todd would be asking me out.
And if I may interject into this this nice little exchange, maybe at that point, Todd, your futuristic Nokia flip starts vibrating in your pocket. And maybe it's a message from your sister saying, well, your folks are going to actually be home for dinner tonight. Nothing fancy, but they said they're going to order pizza.
Todd will say that he's got plans for dinner, but if Tate wants to hang out afterwards, he's got his number.
Tate will have, like, sort of clearly looked down when he's like, oh no, I'm busy. But, like, when he's like, sure, afterwards, you'll see him perk up and say, like, for sure. I'm usually in one of the biodomes after school, and I usually stay until about sunset before going home. Fall and spring are my favorites.
Spring's actually my favorite, personally.
Tate will mention that he likes going there, especially to look at the cherry blossoms.
And I feel like there's this awkward bit of tensions just there after the whole date misconception.
You are not wrong, and it's perfect.
Yeah, great. I guess I'll see you later then. And just turn, walk, but he does that thing where he throws his hand up behind him to wave goodbye.
Tate will also wave, realizing that, like, after he does it, that Todd obviously can't see it before leaving to go to class.
I imagine that whole exchange being like one whole page, and there's several panels in it with just the two of you looking at each other awkwardly and no speech bubbles.
Yes, please. Like, there's one splash at the top, and then like six panels, and then the final, like, sort of long panel at the bottom.
Yes. Glad that bridge has been crossed.
I mean, if this happens, I'm totally down.
I'm definitely not. I'm not going to say it's not going to happen.
I'm not saying it's not a date, but
but Todd is going to dress a little better.
Wear the good underwear tonight.
Please, you don't do that on the first date, Chris.
I thought you were going to say, please, I don't wear underwear.
We can't afford them.
We can't afford it. Yeah. Okay. Just to clarify for the listeners at home or wherever they may be, Tate's currently suffering from three conditions.
Yeah, he's angry, hopeless, and guilty.
So he's just like desperately struggling to try to find some semblance of peace in his day to day.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why it's so awkward for him, because he's like, all of the stuff that happened is just bad. And so he has this rage in him where he's like, he needs to do something. But he's also guilty because he has hurt people around him, and he's hopeless because he's been told that he's a destroyer and he hasn't yet been able to figure out how to do things that don't hurt people. Like, he wants to help, he wants to be a hero, but he hasn't internalized what that really means. So he's you know, a complex ball of emotions of a hormonal teenager, and he's trying lots of things and being super awkward at it.
But is Todd the easy relief you're trying to fling yourself into?
I think Todd is the sacrifice and easy relief that he's trying to find. You're going to help him build hope and also not be guilty.
Yeah, so I think right now, to clear guilty, you have to make some sort of sacrifice. And I think Tate's coming out of his shell, his little loner bubble, reaching out to Todd, especially since he's the one who flung Todd down an escalator. Just that little bit of discomfort in putting himself out there, along with Todd not turning his back on Tate's, I think that does absolve Tate's guilt. I think you can clear that condition.
Awesome. I was also going to say, depending on how the date goes, you know, other sacrifices might be made.
I really hope we have one fan that starts shipping you two real hard.
We both have TT, right?
Yeah.
It's gotta happen, Chris.
It has to happen. Cool. Switching over to Alex, aka Todd Tabor.
I imagine these are mostly, like, thoughts Todd's had, maybe written in a journal, perhaps. I may not go to my classes still, but I have a purpose now. I'm gonna be the best damn hero the city's ever seen. It's gonna be a long road. That fight with Splice showed me that I may not be the badass that I thought I was.
We see an average classroom in Horizon High.
Among the students, only one stands out as familiar. A girl with long blonde hair dressed simply in old jeans and a band t-shirt that reads, Taco Tuesday. Three panels. The digital clock displayed in the classroom smart board reads, 3:28. The girl, Talia Tabor, chews the end of her pen as a speech bubble comes from off panel.
I think that just about does it for today. Any questions?
The class packs up to leave, Talia falling behind as a few other students bump into her on their way out.
Sure, I got Robbie out of there before that fuckstick could do whatever we plan to do with him. But I got taken out of that fight just as fast. And if I'm gonna be the best, I'm gonna need to hold my own. Not be quite so rash.
Five panels. Walking outside, Talia finds her brother.
Leaning against one of the trees, just smoking.
She runs to meet with him, calling out, Todd, sorry to keep you waiting. I got held up. We pull back and watch the two walk away from school together.
The fuck took you so long? I swear to God, I was watching the leaves change color.
I left something behind in class. I had to go back for it. The scenery changes. They've walked some distance through Horizon City proper. Talia stops at an intersection and says, Here's my detour, unless you want to go do my job tonight.
Fuck no, they don't pay you enough. After what happened yesterday, Talia said she was gonna show me how to fight. She's got some free time when she's not working her night job, so I'm hoping that works out pretty well.
One panel. Talia walks across the street, leaving Todd in the background. All right, try to stay out of trouble at least, yeah?
Ha!
We next see a series of panels showing Talia walk through Horizon City streets as the sun begins to set. Passing under streetlights, her figure is drawn as a silhouette. The last panel of this series shows a stretch of street, ending with the convenience store at which she works. Snacks and stuff. But she is nowhere to be seen.
Oh, jeez. Right now I'm kind of glad that our parents aren't around so much. They saw how bad I'm beaten. They'd think that I was getting jumped every few days I was coming home from school. But hey, I think I'm getting better. I landed a few blows on her for the last few sessions. Kind of tough though, you know? I still feel like I kind of gotta hold back so I don't hurt her. She's my sister after all.
One panel. An empty, dark alley. We see snacks and stuff across the street.
Seeing her fight is crazy. It's like she knows what I'm doing before I'm gonna do it. She's got me even using my teleporting when we're fighting. And every time I think I'm about to get her, she perfectly counters all my hits. And every time I ask her, what if I'm gonna fight another teleport? You gotta teach me how to do this. All she'll say is, I'll tell you when you're ready. For now, don't let down your guard. Then she fucking socked me in the nose. This hero shit's hard.
One panel, an old-timey fire escape. Sounds of footsteps against metal are included.
I've been thinking. I still don't know what those manimals are planning to do. I think Splice said something about getting dirt on the mare? I still don't know what the hell they stole from that lab. I really, really need to try and figure out what the hell they're planning. But I think I've learned my lesson. Last time, I tried going alone, and I ended up getting knocked the fuck out. Thinking forward, I think I got a couple options. I don't know how much I can trust them yet, though. Those guys that I met on Remembrance Day. That Recharge guy seems to be a pretty established hero. That Tate guy, he almost fucking broke my neck, tossed me down that escalator. But he seems pretty decent-natured. Kind of cute, too. I don't know much about that Scott kid. Kind of freaks me out a little, though. I don't know if it's the golden skin, the wings, or the shitload of eyes everywhere. But one thing's for certain, I need to find out what the hell's going on in this town. I need to know if the manimals had a part to do with Mr. Miracle's death. If I can figure this shit out, that's gonna start me up this chain. And no one should count me out. One day I'm gonna be number one. I should really start thinking about a name. All the best heroes have a really cool name.
One panel, the rooftop of a three-story building. Still in silhouette, we see the figure of Talia stashing her backpack near the roof's access door. A close-up of Talia drawing a hood over her head. Her hoodie glows a faint neon violet. Her face is blurred, her image distorts. And from off-panel, a small speech bubble slips in. A woman screams. So after that, I do want to ask you, Alex, if there's anything else you want to explore as part of Todd's downtime, I guess. Anything else you want to mention that wasn't kind of covered in his narration?
Just that he's probably spending a little more time with Robbie than he normally would, trying to like cheer him up and make him feel better about being an unpowered person. Todd would let him probably win more games. Not like noticeably, but he would definitely let him win in video games a little more often than he normally would. He would probably not be as Todd to Robbie as normal. So a little less snarky, a little more caring. Maybe take Robbie out on walks a little more often. Like the good dog he is.
Right, okay. Because I'm super interested, and I find it hard not to be interested. Can you guys tell me how the not date goes? If the next page that we flip, you know, we've put aside the montage of panels to show that time is passing, and we focus on the singular events of the two of you meeting up to hang out.
Tate absolutely gets there first. He was going there anyway, which is why he invited Todd. And so I think you'll see him sort of sitting on a bench surrounded by like all of this beautiful fall foliage. And you just kind of see the sun slowly setting and him sitting there alone, waiting for Todd to show up. And the leaves are red, but like glowing because the light is just hitting them the right way to make them pop.
And then joke's on you, Todd just ruins it all. Pew, pew, pew.
Joke's on you, Todd doesn't show up. Finger gun.
He's so sad.
What a delinquent.
No, Todd will actually show up. He'll be wearing some nicer black jeans, jean jacket, since it's the fall biome. His hair maybe a little less of a mess than normal.
You'll see him, like, silhouetted, sitting on a bench. He's looking at the sunset, so I'm going to say that you're coming up behind him.
You see, like, the silhouette of Todd in the background as you see Tate sitting on the bench, and just that, like, little speech bubble of, like, the preparing to go in, and walks over and then sit down and say, oh, really does look nice at sunset.
And you'll see, like, it'll go from silhouette to, like, actual character faces, and you'll see that, like, Tate's face just kind of lights up when Todd shows up and sits down next to him. He looks at Todd and then looks back at the sunset. He says, yeah, it's my favorite. I come here almost every day. After they've been sitting for like maybe a few minutes, potentially in silence, he'll invite you to come walk with him.
Yeah, let's see the sights.
All right. It's going to be them like walking down this path, standing, I want to say like, not terribly far away from each other. Like, so my hands are definitely in my pockets. I'm assuming your hands are in your pockets. And it's just, they're definitely loner type people and they're definitely together. And like the leaves are like red and yellow and orange and green still with a few trees. And then there's the leaves on the ground also sort of like twisting around them. There's just going to be a few shots of them in different scenes in different places. I don't think there's going to be many words.
I don't think till the very end, at least. So, you want to tell me what that whole thing on the escalator was about?
I am really sorry about that. When we were going up the escalator, I don't know what happened, but we had already gotten to the top and he'd gone into the mayor's office and we found this angel-like creature there. And your friend was on the ground dead. And when you charged over to check him out, the angel speared you to a wall. And I got angry. So I went and I attacked the angel and I threw him out the window. And when I did that, it was me throwing you down the stairs. So I don't know if that really happened or if it was just in my head. I'm still trying to figure it out. I reacted, and I guess maybe it was just a vision. Maybe it wasn't real after all.
Well, that's pretty intense. Do you normally have visions?
I've never had visions. I mean, I've had dreams. I think dreams are normal. Although I will say that since my powers sort of started acting up, my dreams have been much more vivid. So maybe it was kind of like a waking dream. But yeah, I am really sorry. I went to save you, and I ended up hurting you.
Apology accepted. It seems like you weren't in your right mind at least when it happened.
You'll see that, like, some tension that has been in him this whole time kind of just dissolves.
Your conversation, which is great. I'm digging this whole vibe. It's awesome stuff. You guys are doing perfect, dare I say. So two moves are popping in my head based on this conversation. One of them is obviously comfort or support. However, what I think kind of fits more, even if it's not perfectly on, is the doomed, one of the team moves. When you share a vulnerability or weakness with someone, give them influence over you and ask if they honestly think there's hope for you. It sounds to me like admitting that this vision and admitting to maybe some instability to his power sets from Tate at this point, it is sharing a vulnerability or a weakness. The real question is, if you want to enact this move, Tate, Alan, would you like to give Todd influence over you? Do you want to start caring about what he thinks about you?
I think so. I think this is that moment where he kind of actually reaches out to another person and builds that connection. So with what Nathaniel was saying earlier about, like, how do you kill this thing, and all of the visions that he has so far about, like, this entity of destruction, of this hunger for life, he's realized that this is how you fight it. You don't just take life from everything around you. You build connections so that you can give it back. This is his first step, is he's making a legitimate connection with another person. He's making his first, like, real close friend, potentially. And so, absolutely, he can have influence.
Yeah, and that totally makes sense. And I think, from the sounds of it, Todd, in forgiving Tate for his actions, and even by saying, you know, you weren't in your right mind when you did that, obviously, that is kind of affirming that there is hope for Tate. You know, he's not just a monster. You know, he's not just an asshole who's destroying everything around him.
No, he's doomed. Kill him.
Oh, okay.
No, absolutely. Mark potential, man.
One more potential and I advance.
Pretty fucking close. So, okay. All that aside, interesting character stuff. Alex, I told you to hold on a question. If you don't mind, please repeating it.
So, what can you do? What are your powers? You saw what I can do with my teleportation, at least.
Let me show you. He'll lead you to, like, a more secluded area. You'll notice that it's a little bit different than the other places that you've walked so far. Everywhere else has been, like, beautiful leaves, etc. And this one, like, you'll see that the trees aren't quite as full. Like, they're not as vibrant. Tate will go up to one of the trees and he'll say, "Watch." And he'll touch a tree. You'll see everything around him dim for a moment, and he will get brighter. And then he just jumps, like, 30 feet in the air. Like, hits a branch, and then just starts bouncing around the trees, like, really fast until he comes back to the ground.
Well, damn.
And then he'll actually explain it. He's like, "I've been learning a little bit about my powers, but essentially, I can act as a conduit for everything that's alive. And by drawing in their energy, I can power up myself. But there's always a cost." And you'll see, like, the tree that he just touched, like, all of the leaves will just fall off and it'll look gray and shriveled.
Well, that would explain the feeling I felt after you tossed me. Felt a little weak.
I've been learning maybe how to do it in a better way. But right now, it's very destructive.
I have something a little bit like that. I can negate powers.
Really?
Unfortunately, it's not permanent, but yeah, I can stop people from being able to use their powers as long as they're the source of the power.
I don't think I can do much about the gadgets.
Tate is now wondering, like, huh, maybe the entity, the evil thing that he has to, that is his doom? Wonder if Todd could cancel it.
Right? Like, did Tate just meet the one guy that is vital and key to destroying his adversary?
Yeah, like, that is absolutely everything that's going in his mind right now. So Todd, you'll, like, after you say that, Tate will just, like, go blank for a panel or two.
During that panel, he will definitely say, but keep it a secret, I don't like people knowing about that one. I like people thinking that I'm a one-trick pony with my teleporting.
Tate will nod slowly. Let me tell you a story. And then I'd like to do a fast forward, just because we don't have to do the full exposition again of all of his stuff. Like, you'll see that the sun will have set by the time it's done, so you'll be in the dark. He'll tell you the source of his powers, and that one of the reasons why he's nervous about using them is because if he overuses them, he will become basically the bad guy. He'll become an avatar for this evil god. But if he doesn't use them, something's going to hunt him down and kill him. And so he wonders, maybe if that happens, you'd be willing to help him out.
Todd will stick out his hand for a handshake and say, you got my back, I'll get yours. I've got some plans for the future, too.
Tate will, like, take his hand in a firm handshake and, like, look him straight in the eye. Be like, you're on.
Big smile.
This is a beautiful bromance.
Yeah, I mean, that's a powerful panel to, like, end the section on. You get that nice, was the Schwarzenegger hand, bro handshake.
Oh no, Todd is way too skinny for that shit.
Oh, it's just a couple of skinny boys trying to do the manly handshake.
Well, I think, I don't think you see the shake. I think you just see them, like, clasping hands. Like, the panel would be, like, from the waist up, so you see, like, the hands are at the bottom, and then their faces, and, like, it's dark, but they're still sort of lit up, and then you see that it's just a street light.
Yeah, so we've officially, I think, for the first time in this entire story, we've officially established, like, a concrete team dynamic. Like, it's official. Like, if you two had future Facebook, you'd mark teammates off on future Facebook with each other. To frame the next section of issue number 16, we flip the page, we're at a spring biome, and it's Tate Temple and his good buddy, the Soul Seer, aka Nathaniel, aka Nate, aka not John Constantine, trying to tap into some of Tate Temple's powers and potential and see what he can do and really hone some of his skills. Nathaniel's understandably kind of just sitting against a tree, kind of guiding with gestures, and like he's talking, but we don't have speech bubbles. It's just kind of a montage.
I feel like Nathaniel, since he's more of like the spiritual side, probably will have him do things like meditate and sort of do a little bit of inner focus instead of all of this external stuff that Tate sort of feels comes naturally. At first, he'll just be sitting like on the grass, and I'm assuming Nathaniel will just be lying on a bench, like saying things, obviously. And as he's saying things, I want just a series of panels where the world around Tate grows steadily darker, because he's focusing, like, he's not necessarily using his power to take energy, but he is consciously focusing on it. And anytime he does that, obviously everything around him fades. So he's trying to figure out how he can harness his power, but maybe internally instead of externally.
Yeah, we might see a panel with you with Tate sitting like in front of Nathaniel, kind of cross-legged in like a meditative state, and Nathaniel just like reaches into his coat and pulls out a flask and holds it over to Tate. Like, he takes a swig and then passes it to Tate.
Tate will be like, I don't think so, and my dad would be really mad at you.
Your dad's already mad at me. He takes another swig, but he'll put it away. So we get a few panels like that, just a glimpse into the training exercises that are steadily becoming part of Tate's day-to-day life.
Yeah, and I think he also, like, in case Tate is ever in a place where maybe he can't draw energy from around him, they're doing things like, here's a branch, try just sucking the energy out of this and doing stuff, so that, like, you know, he can have something around him that's like a battery, almost. Like, he can just suck in all the energy around him, that's super easy, but control is the hard part.
So at the end of that montage, we get a few more panels kind of as a transition, leading away from the spring biome, Tate and Nathaniel walking through the streets, catching a free ride on one of the luxurious public transport buses. You get little snacks and everything. It's great. And eventually getting dropped off, probably in the neighborhood of Tate's house, walking through the neighborhood and approaching your home. I imagine it's late, maybe around dinner time. Nathaniel's probably really into making it back for dinner. There might even, while you guys are walking, there's a speech bubble from him.
You know, I'm going to be pretty mad if we don't make it back for your mother's mac and cheese. She makes some of the best mac and cheese I've ever had, no lie.
It is pretty excellent. I'll race you.
He looks at you. There's one panel he looks at you. Another panel, his hand goes into his coat. Another panel, it pulls out that flask. He takes a swig. He puts it back. His eyes narrow and he says, nope. And he keeps walking.
Oh, that was amazing. I'll like be stunned for a moment just because like I was ready and then he didn't. So I'll just like take a few steps to like catch up with it, but then we'll just continue on our way.
We get another close-up of your house and we see the lights are on. Your dad's been home for a while, for at least a little while now, and there's a mild sense of normalcy at the Temple household. Not completely. You still have Nathaniel crashing with you. He's a fucking weirdo. You still have that thing with your mom that's going on. You know, your dad was missing for a while. Like, there's still tension and odd stuff there. But there's a little bit of warmth slowly returning. So we get that front shot of your house, and then the next panel is, you know, you and Nathaniel opening the door. And we see some speech bubbles. We hear some voices. And maybe some clanging of dishes and cutlery from the kitchen. We see a speech bubble from your dad that says, I missed you a lot, but yeah, I really missed your mac and cheese, honey. And, we get a speech bubble from your sister that says, can I eat in my room? And a speech bubble from your mom that says, you cannot eat in your room, Sky. No. And then another speech bubble from someone else. This smells delicious, Mrs. Temple. I'm so glad you were willing to have me here. But I think I heard the door open. Tate must be home. And then this does not faze Nathaniel at all. In the follow-up panel, he continues strutting in as nothing's out of the ordinary. Like, he doesn't care. But it's ball's in your court. What's up?
You'll see Tate almost stutter step. Like, he heard, he's like, oh yeah, like the normal family conversation. And then there's like, what? Who's that? And Daniel like leaves him alone. So he's just like a step behind when he walks into the kitchen to see who this stranger is in his home.
Sure. And as you follow behind Nathaniel, Nathaniel does say as he walks into the kitchen,
you know, I was missing you, Mrs. Temple, but I think I was missing your mac and cheese a little bit more.
And he goes and takes a seat at the table. And when you walk in, you see your family there. You see Nathaniel, he takes a seat, his back's to you, and he's already digging in. He pulls out his flask, he sets it where a cup would be for someone to drink. Like, he's going all in. Your sister is sitting on one end of the table. She has your plate all done up. She looks mildly pissy, but maybe it's just a teenager thing. Whatever. Your dad's in the other end of the table, and he's just full of warmth. Like, he's, honest to God, happy to be here. Then you see a familiar face. It might take you a second or two to register who it is, because she's dressed completely differently than the last time you saw her.
Oh, no.
No longer wearing quote-unquote Hot Topic attire. You know, her hair is a bit more wavy this time around.
Secret agent woman, right?
No, not the secret agent woman. It's the young girl that you encountered at City Hall that basically tricked you.
Yeah, like the Spider Woman.
Yeah, the Spider Woman. She's there. She's in this lovely pastel pink dress. Her hair's done up nice. She's wearing bright makeup. She has a plate of food and she's like smiling in your direction when you walk in.
And Tate is just floored. There's going to be a thought bubble of like, she looks familiar. And then probably another thought bubble that shows her as she was before. Like,
It's one of those thought bubbles that has the comparison of like who she is now and who she was on the other hand.
That's exactly
like an equal sign between the two with a question mark.
Exactly. And he'll be like, what are you doing here?
Her smile lessens a little bit, but she says, I hope you're not mad, sweetie, but I wanted to surprise you at home. I know you wanted to introduce me to your family, like, together, but I thought I'd catch you here and we could just do it tonight. She's definitely looking at you a little bit coy, like she holds you in her gaze for a little bit, but then looks away and then looks back at you. It's at this point that your mother speaks as she's putting maybe a basket of bread on the table or something. Tate, you never told us you had a girlfriend. Why would you try to keep such a sweet young girl like this a secret? And she's looking at you. Your mother is looking at you with this soft smile and like taking in your family as a whole, minus Spider-Woman, minus Nathaniel. You catch a strong glimpse of what your family used to be.
You're so mean, Chris.
Yeah, fuck you, Alan.
Tate like opens his mouth and closes it a few times. He's searching for the right words to say. This is where I would in D&D love to make an insight roll on the Spider-Woman. Like, what is she trying to do here?
There's a couple of things you could do. The most appropriate is probably pierce the mask. If you want to stand there with your mouth agape and just like, what are you doing? Like in your head and watch her. But I almost want to hear you interact with the scene a little bit more.
That's totally fair. It's really like his mom, though, is like he's focused on that from his perspective. Like she is going to be front and center, but you're going to see the other like Spider-Woman behind her.
And your mom, like as you're watching all of this and focusing on your mom, she steps aside and she like gestures and she has a place set at the table for you. She's not set you a place at the table in a year or so. Like, she's never went out of her way to do it. It was always like, food's here, go grab your own dishes, do whatever. Of course, it's right next to Spider-Woman.
Of course it is. I think Tate at this point is going to say something like, this is so awkward. Because he doesn't want to ruin it for his mom, but he also has no idea what's going on. So he's trying to play along, but like, because he wants his mom to still like him. But, like, he is concerned about being poisoned again.
Just seeing Spider-Woman here with your family out of the blue, definitely, I can see definitely throwing you off, which is why I did it.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I did it for other reasons, but I was also super psyched about this particular scene.
You're so mean to me, Chris.
So I'm thinking, why don't I give you some time to process that, and maybe let's switch gears a little bit and get Todd started on his first scene, and then I'll jump back to you about halfway through, and we'll just kind of keep rolling.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait for fucking Tabitha to be waiting for me at home.
Mr. Tabor, Toddy Boy.
Todd Yule, thank you.
Todd Yule? Oh my god, that's my headcanon for his full first name now. 100%. Todd, you've just, you've walked with your sister from school on this particular day a little bit, and she just departed to go to her evening job at snacks and stuff. What does Todd get up to when she leaves? This is basically picking up right at the end of where we left off her little narrative stuff at the beginning.
I'd like to imagine at this point she kind of they kind of have like a regiment set where it's like, all right, on days when we can train together, we're gonna spar, I'll teach you new moves and stuff, but on days when you're off, I doubt you're gonna listen to me, but at least an hour a day you gotta go and spend practicing. So Todd's gonna go wear himself out. There's like an abandoned like warehouse somewhere near their homes as they live in the worst part of town. So he'll head to their normal like training spot and he'll spend a good hour and a half practicing the moves she's taught him, mixing in his powers, trying to think of new creative ways he can try and best her.
Can you give me just like a few snapshot panels of some of the stuff? Like, is he doing Mortal Kombat uppercuts? Is he like teleporting behind things and kicking dummies in the spine?
I feel like it's a mix of stuff. He might take a little bit of inspiration from Mortal Kombat, a little bit of like Raiden-ass scorpion moves where just like poof behind and into the uppercut, poof above to a kick down to the ground. But I think mostly right now he's trying to focus on the basics, trying to get those down as best as he can.
back in old times, they had those like rotating dummies for practice, where you would hit them and then it spin around. You try to have to deflect the blow, and the harder you hit, the faster it comes around. A lot of practicing with that. So bruises on like his forearms from blocking and stuff like that. A lot of sweat. Maybe as time goes on, you even though it's October, he ends up having to like take off his jacket and stuff.
So he's really putting a lot of himself into this.
Probably far more than Talia even expects.
Killer. Question, out of curiosity, does he listen to music while doing this?
Oh, absolutely. He's listening to the reunion album of Limp Bizkit.
Did they like bring them back from the dead, or like,
you see, it was a hidden album. They were meant to put it out before the members all died, but they didn't get out in time.
Okay, cool, great. So we get this nice training montage of Todd actually like developing a combat style. What follows afterwards?
Probably takes a nice walk around town, smoking, trying to cool down after working so damn hard. Maybe going over to just check on Robbie, see how he's doing.
I'm going to conveniently say that Pep and his brother are probably hanging out away from their house tonight, off doing something.
In that case, he'll take his walk by himself, maybe head down to the spring biome for a few hours while the sun's starting to go down, then head back home.
We might see Todd get home, walk in, his dad's asleep on the couch, as is probably custom. His mom's already out for her evening job, I guess, whatever. We can almost maybe do a little bit of a callback to Todd's first issue of him, like, alone in the house, you know, at the kitchen, send himself up with some old pizza and just kind of roaming around on his own.
After having dinner, he probably goes up to his room for a bit, writes down how he feels. He's been making some progress in his journal that's been established now. And let's take that smoking gun off the wall, and he just starts playing around with the guitar.
Nice. Hey, he's kind of fiddled with it before. Maybe he knows the basics?
Probably your basic chords. So he just starts playing Stairway to Heaven, as all guitarists do.
Some time will pass. Maybe enough time where we elapse from one panel of him playing on the guitar to him just kind of kicking back in bed, to him asleep for a little bit. And then a panel of him waking up to a thudding sound from his sister's room that kind of stirs him from his sleep.
That's definitely got his attention. So can't imagine he has anything like sports related or weapon related in his room.
He has a guitar.
He is not going to use that guitar. That is a present from his grandfather. So maybe just like with the pen he uses to write in his journal or pencil. Just creeping through down the hallway, yeah. And like slowly opens the door to peek through.
And the first thing that catches his eye is the faint neon violet glow emanating from a heap on the floor. There's a person lying there, probably a girl, wearing some sort of clothing that seems to be emitting this neon violet light, but she is face down. The window is open and she's not far from it.
So, who the fuck are you and what are you doing in my house?
There's this faint wheezing sound from the person on the floor.
No, shit. It hurt. He'll still a little cautious after the whole mammals thing. He's probably still on edge a little bit. But he'll go over and check out the person.
A nice few creeping panels of him getting closer, holding the pen like a knife or something. Just very cautious.
Oh, absolutely.
Awesome. And one of him crouching down and then flipping over the person on the floor. And the light from the, like, hooded sweater that they're wearing flickers a few times. And you can see this person's face is, at first, masked by some sort of, like, digital illusion. I imagine it kind of like some sort of projector built into the clothing, maybe, that just throws up basically a Sims nudity blur over the face. But once you flip this person over, it kind of scrambles and flashes, and it's obviously on the fritz. And when it dies down, the face is Talia. It's Talia lying there, and her eye is black, and she has a trickle of blood coming from her mouth and bruising on her cheek, and like you can tell her breathing is strained, and she's not conscious.
Oh, what the fuck? What'd you do? He'll pull the hood down, run to the bathroom, get a glass of water, see if he can try and wake her up.
And I think once you get a glass of water and you start coming back and you walk into the room, you're moving over to her, you hear the buzzing of a shitty futuristic Nokia flip. And it's not yours. You don't feel it buzzing in your pocket. Or it's not coming from your room, wherever your phone is. It's definitely coming from her person.
Well, she's not conscious enough to be mad at me, so.
That's the spirit. You set down the water, you search her for her phone, you pull it out, and you see on the caller ID, it just says, Grandpa. That's a great point to cut back to the awkward dinner party at the Temple household. Alan, set the scene for me.
We totally pick up, like, I'm sitting down next to Mary. Like, dinner is almost over, or, like, the main course has been eaten, and now we're, like, having some sort of dessert. Cookies and tea or something like that. You can see that everybody is talking, and Tate still has not been able to come out of his own head. Where you just, he's just like, what is going on? Like, is she here to, like, backstab me again? Does she feel bad about what she did? Like, for real this time? Like, how did she approach my mom? Why did my mom listen to her? Like, what is going, like, and then he'll be recalled to the scene, I guess, again, because his mom will say something directly to him. And he's mostly just been, like, avoiding having to talk by just consistently eating the whole time.
Right, right. And I think a little bit of that in some of these panels, we probably get a few of the, a few, like, snapshots of some of the conversations that are happening around the table. And her name is Mary. If it didn't come out in-game before, it definitely comes out at some point at the dinner table.
For sure.
And she's talking to your sister, Skye, about volleyball. So they actually seem to be hitting it off a little bit, with Mary talking to her about volleyball, talking to her about student council, I guess, stuff like that.
In Tate's head, he didn't even know that Mary went to their school.
yeah. It quickly becomes clear that, yeah, she totally does. And she's, let's see what grade she's in. She's a sophomore.
Okay, so you're below.
Your parents are, like, talking to each other, but also talking to slash at you. Nathaniel's not saying much. He's mostly, honestly, while you're staring out into the void, Nathaniel is staring at you, kind of bemused.
Uh-huh. He definitely knows that I'm thrown.
Oh, totally, totally. So he kind of, like, with a little bit of a grin as you're struggling to make your way through this awkward dinner, he kind of says, where'd you two lovebirds meet?
I'm gonna glare at him.
He slowly takes a bite of a cookie.
And then I look at Mary to see if she wants to feel the question.
She leans in a little bit and she whispers, and you're pretty sure the rest of the table can hear it, but she definitely tries to whisper it, and she's just like, your uncle's kind of a weird one, isn't he? And she smiles and sits back up straight and looks at Nathaniel and says, We met at the beginning of the school year. We kind of ran into each other outside of school. Very casual at first until I found out that we both kind of really like going to the same biomes. And, you know, one thing after another, here I am. She takes a slow sip of tea. And Nathaniel just says, is that right?
Tate will just nod and say, like, it certainly was just one thing after another.
Your mom will say, that's so delightful. Tate, I still can't believe you didn't tell us anything about her. Why were you trying to keep her a secret?
Well, it was unexpected when it happened, and I didn't know what would happen. So it was kind of just going with the flow.
Mary giggles and takes your hand, and she says, you weren't embarrassed. I don't embarrass you, do I?
I'll just look at her and say, like, I wasn't sure of your intentions, and I didn't want to make any assumptions, because I feel like that has gotten me into trouble in the past.
It's very considerate. It's one of the things that I like most about you.
I hate this person so much. She's ruining my romance with Todd.
Your dad says, well, I think dinner is just about done. He turns to your mom. Why don't we clean up and, you know, let the kids go off and enjoy the rest of the evening? And your mom says, I think that's a perfectly delightful idea. And they, like, get up. Like, she puts her hand in your dad's shoulder and they get up and start cleaning off the table. And Nathaniel quickly takes a few more cookies and just stands up and leaves before stopping at the doorway and giving you, like, a wink. And he says, don't do anything I wouldn't do. He walks off. Sky looks at Mary saying, okay, so if you're going to hang out with Tate for the rest of the night, maybe we can talk at school tomorrow? And Mary smiles and says, of course, anytime. And Sky scampers off. And Mary looks at you. Do you want to go upstairs?
Oh, man, what a thing to say. Yeah, sure. Let's do this. I need to know what's going on. I need her to answer some questions for me and or just explain everything that just happened. I'll lead / follow her upstairs to my room because it feels like she already knows where it is.
If you walk in first, she will close the door behind you too.
Yeah, I expected that. So I'm just going to be like, so what is this about?
Isn't it obvious we're dating? And she has the smile that's like she knows she's lying, and she knows you know she's lying.
Tate's just kind of going to sit on the bed and be like, I don't understand. Please help me understand.
She begins walking across the room to you.
Well, after our little encounter at City Hall, you know, you scared me quite a bit, Tate. And I don't like to be scared like that. So I thought, wouldn't it be nice to figure out where you live, who your family is, because you will never scare me again. Do you understand? And she's like standing right in front of you.
I sort of nod. I'm like, okay, I see where this is going. He'll stand up so they're almost eye to eye. Like, he gets that she's doing this as a sort of proactive defense now, because now he has something to be concerned about. Depending on what you do, there's no reason to be scared. Do you remember what happened last time?
She rolls her eyes. Of course I remember. It's hard to forget that. There's something wrong with you, isn't it?
I don't know if there's something wrong with me. If someone claims that they are afraid and that people have hurt them, I think it's normal to try to help. I don't think it's normal to then attack the person who helped you.
I was just buying into Splice's little game.
Are you still?
No, I haven't seen Splice since Remembrance Day. Good riddance. Guy's a lunatic.
You're not wrong.
We agree on something.
Yes, we do. If you're not with Splice anymore, why is there an issue?
I don't like when people have something on me. So I need to make sure that you know if something happens to me, the people I know where your family is.
To be honest, until I saw you in my house, I didn't know who you were. I didn't even know you went to my school.
Well, now you know who I am, and you know that maybe I'm just as scary as you are.
This seems more for you than it is for me, obviously. But I still don't exactly get any of this. Like, clearly this is a, like, there's something wrong. But I don't think it's on me to try to fix
this. Typical boy. Of course, you don't know what's wrong. And she, like, walks past you and throws herself in your bed and just, like, lays back.
I mean, you are the one who tried to kill me.
I wasn't gonna kill you.
Did I know that? Did you make
Well, I didn't know you weren't gonna kill me.
I didn't. I obviously didn't.
And I obviously didn't kill you either, Tate.
Yeah, but you're the one who stuck poison in my body and made me, like, suffer severe pain and then stuck me to a wall.
She, like, throws up her hands. That's her only response, is just, like, throw up her hands.
It's like, in terms of what we did, I thought what I did was fairly small in comparison.
It felt like you were ripping me apart from the inside.
I didn't realize you felt so strongly about me.
She, like, sighs and rolls her eyes and just, like, fidgets a little bit before whipping one of your pillows at you.
I will probably not catch it.
Sure, it bounces harmlessly off of you, whatever. Take a condition. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, that'd be so sad. I'm like, so tell me about yourself. How did you end up in this to begin with?
Do you mean hanging out with Splice, or?
Yeah, I mean, now that you have come to my home and established yourself as my girlfriend, I feel like it behooves me to know something about you.
I suppose maybe we could talk a little bit, but I want a couple of things. One, I want to stay here tonight. Two, if you can, and I'm sure you can you set aside some of your mom's mac and cheese for me to take tomorrow?
The second I can probably do, although that will be tricky considering the other people in this house. The first one, I am not sure about.
Oh, please, your parents love me.
Did you do something?
I used my charm. I'm charming, Tate.
Tate's just giving her like this sidelong glance.
I'll go have a sleepover with your sister if I have to.
I think that would be much better.
You're no fun.
Like, if you need to stay in the house, if you're running from something, I don't mind potentially helping you with that.
But I'm not running from anything.
Then why do you want to stay here?
Because I want a place to crash.
Tate's, like, still waiting for her a little bit. Like, I feel like there's something more.
You know what? While you're talking to her, I feel like we've inquired enough by this point. If you want to take a look at Pierce the Mask and see some of those questions there, throw down 2d6 and add your mundane to it. You're still angry, though, so your anger makes piercing the mask more difficult. So you're adding your mundane, but subtracting 2.
So I got a 7, so that's a 5.
Cool, you flat out fail. Which means you get to mark potential, which means...
dun, dun, dun.
Which means for the first time in this game, someone gets to take an advancement. We'll lead out of the scene and we'll loop back around and see. I'll give you a moment to see what advancements are available to your playbook and see what you might want. But, like, you ask her this inquiry. I think it was, like, why do you want to stay here if you're not running away or something? And her response was just, like, I want somewhere to crash. And I think what follows is maybe just, like, a series of panels of the two of you conversing, but we don't get any more information. It just always ends up, like, I just want somewhere to stay. I'm not running away from anything. I'm not scared. All right. I'm here now. I don't want to leave. Like, it's dark out already. You want to kick me out into the world? It's dark. I'm alone. What sort of monster are you? You know, just stuff like that.
Okay. I mean, I think he'll pick up on you probably just said it as a throwaway line, but she said, I'm alone. And I think that might resonate with him. But I think he'll say that it probably is more appropriate for her to stay with, like, since she and Sky were hitting it off, then they should definitely have a sleepover, and that would be more appropriate.
Then we will loop back around on this and see how that kind of finishes off as we jump back over to Todd. We left you off with picking up your sister's phone and the caller ID reading Grandpa.
Yeah, he's processing that. Processing. Answering. Grandpa?
And there's a moment where there's no response.
This is Todd, isn't it?
Yeah.
Couldn't reach your sister. What? Her suit must be down.
Huh?
She alright?
No. She looks like she got beat pretty bad. What the hell happened? Also, why is she dressed up like she's a superhero? Why is she a superhero and she didn't tell me?
I don't have the time or the patience to explain all that bullshit tonight, kid. Listen, what's important right now is your sister got the shit beat out of her because she wasn't careful. She went in blind, she didn't survey the area, she fucked up. And right now, there's someone in danger that really needs a hero to help them out. I can't do it, your sister can't do it. Guess the ball's in your court, you want to step up?
Just the moment that thought ball, it's hero time. Where am I going, Grandpa?
Not your grandpa, but why don't you take a solid couple of minutes to make sure your sister's stable, huh?
I pour the water on her.
She groans, but doesn't wake up or anything like that.
I don't see any more blood, and she's moving.
Christ, kid. All right. I'm going to need you to do something for me. Because I'm not losing a hero tonight. I need you to strip her down. We have to bandage her up, and I'm not there to do it, so.
I don't subscribe to those kinds of sights.
Not all the way down, dumbass.
Oh, you mean just the suit. Oh, okay. Oh, I guess. And yeah, Todd'll try and figure out how to take the suit off of her.
And I think we get a few panels that follow of just, like, Todd being walked through, like, bandaging someone up and, like, seeing if her ribs are broken or
anything like that. The weird dude on the phone walks him through the process.
Little thought bubble. She tells me I have to be careful, and she just goes and gets her ass kicked. Am I about to get my ass kicked? I'm not as good as she is. Fuck.
By the end of the montage, maybe we have, like, rudimentary bandaging around her ribs. A rib or two is definitely broken. Some of her cuts kind of bandaged up, her suit tossed aside, and maybe her not laying on the floor. Yeah?
Yeah, I could probably move her to her bed.
And the quote-unquote grandpa that's on the phone says,
"All right, that's probably about as much as you can do, huh? Now, you probably don't have a suit. No?
No, I'm not the suit kind of person.
Got something with a hood? Got a mask?
Yeah, one sec. Just go grab a hoodie real quick. Okay, now what?
I'm gonna direct you to a location. Bunch of creeps kidnapped a girl. Alright? Thing you gotta do is get in there and rescue her. I don't care what you do to these assholes. But there's someone who needs a hero tonight, and you're the only one who's gonna react. So, I'm gonna get you some coordinates. Let you know the address. And, kid, we're dealing with right bunch of bastards. Call themselves the Grey Ghost Syndicate. They ain't gonna hesitate in taking you out if you mess up. It's a miracle your sister made it out."
Wow, what a dumb name. But yeah, I'll be careful.
Listen, kid, all villains have dumb names. A lot of heroes have dumb names too, come to think about it.
And you'll get a message on the phone with an address. It's actually not too far away. Probably outside of Eastwood, but still kind of in a crappy neighborhood. It's the address to a restaurant, a small-time restaurant called Salty Tears.
Todd's gonna just teleport out the door so he doesn't wake up his dad and head off to go and try and be a hero.
Now, as you're going, like, this guy hasn't hung up on you yet. He's still on the line. Is there anything you want to ask him or talk about?
Who are you? If you're not my grandpa, then who the fuck are you?
I'm an old superhero from way back in the day. You know, when being a hero meant getting the job done the right way by scaring the piss in the villains.
In them?
Yeah, by scaring the piss straight into villains. His response is, yeah, the lucky ones.
Yeah, that's great and all, old man, but who the fuck are you?
I went by a name, Chimera. Right now, I'm your sister's mentor.
So she's what, your protege?
You could say that. I ain't gonna be around forever.
Oh, okay then. Got any advice?
Don't get fucked up. If they take a swing at you, duck. If you can't duck, move back.
Alright, 5 Ds. Duck, dodge, dip, dive, and dodge.
Close enough, kid. Your sister's a real piece of work. She's been coming along pretty well, but I guess even, seasoned heroes can fuck up once in a while. I hear she's been training you, though.
Yeah, she's been teaching me how to fight. She have powers?
Yeah. Yeah, she does. She can, short-range teleport. Call it blinking.
Not that bitch. She's been she's been holding out on me.
Here's another pro tip, kid. Heroes lie. They do it a lot.
That's fucked up. Heroes are supposed to be the good guys. They shouldn't lie.
There are no good guys.
See, that's why I stay away from cigars. As he lights up a cigarette. So how long has this been going on?
2 years now, give or take.
2 years?
Did I stutter?
Oh, she's gonna have some explaining to do when she's conscious.
Sure, if she ain't dead when you come back.
Wasn't that the point of the bandaging?
Bandaging aren't miracles, kid. In case you haven't heard, the city's straight up out of miracles these days.
Ha!
Yeah, that was a pretty good one, huh?
Swinging back over to Tate's, Alan, what's the rest of that evening look like? If we get just like a page or two of the afterwards, what's up?
I'll say, like, once we've established that she's going to stay the night, I think it's fair that, like, Tate is still going to chat with her. Like, he wants to get to know who she is, like, as a person, just to make sure that everything is okay. Obviously, everything is not okay because she's, you know, overtly threatening his family. But also, he kind of gets it, because she feels powerless.
Allegedly.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I'm guessing that's also the reason she went to Splice and got spider powers to begin with, is because she doesn't like people having power over her, and so she got some way to get better.
Sure, and these hunches are very likely. You know, they seem pretty likely to me. But these conversations you have with her, she's avoiding a lot of direct questions, and you don't get a lot of information out of her, so you really only have your assumptions.
I mean, that's fair. Yeah, I'll do my best, and at some point I'll be like, here, why don't you go chat with Sky for a bit? And then I'm gonna go, like, sit out in the backyard or something, because I need time to process, and Tate likes being outside more than he likes being inside.
Sure. So that particular section probably ends with a panel of you sitting alone outside.
Yeah, probably just in the backyard. Like, it's nighttime, it's dark. He's just chilling. He's sitting out there looking up at the sky. Since we have future public transport, no emissions. So I'm assuming that I can... There's still probably light pollution a little bit, but I'm assuming that I can see the stars a bit. And so he's just staring at the stars, trying to figure out what to do next.
Absolutely. This whole experience, everything Tate's been through so far, has led to an advancement. Do you have one in mind you'd like to take?
So I was actually thinking, if it's cool, one of the advancements I can take is actually burn and flares from the Nova playbook.
And which three flares are you choosing? Do you know yet?
Again, going along the lines of he wants to be someone who is helpful and good, I chose boost, which allows him to spend burn that he's accumulated by powering up to supercharge a teammate's efforts so that they get a bonus to what they're doing.
That's awesome.
Another one is moat. He spends a burn to create a barrier that holds back threats. And then the last one is constructs. So he can spend a burn to create any object up to the size of a person. And he can spend additional burn, assuming that he's managed to charge up his powers enough, to animate it.
Interesting. Are you going to flavor that, like, creating living things? Like, rechanneling life energy into...
Into things, yeah. So, like, sort of like animate objects from D&D. If you
okay, yeah, I see.
That.
That's an awesome angle. I like that. Quirky. A little quirky, but I like it. And then I think we cut to more time passage. We go back to another, like, training montage with Nathaniel. And I think it's during this particular montage where we see kind of a power breakthrough where Tate develops access to these powers. You know, he learns how to channel life energy and build it up and then use it in these different ways, these ways that are completely different than he's ever done before. And we see a little bit more on Nathaniel's part of, like, actually engaging in the training, like standing over you and guiding you, like a hand on your shoulders and meditating with you and stuff like that. An unknowable yet short passage of time thereafter, this montage covering it, maybe a day, maybe two, maybe even three. The tail end of that montage, Tate and Nathaniel come back home. It's dinner again, but it's just your family. And we get one or two panels just to set the mood that the family's pretty normal now. Like, for everything that's happened, Mary's presence, the fact that your family thinks you have a nice, sweet girlfriend has really kind of, like, returned things to some semblance of normalcy. Like, yeah, you have this dark power, but oh, you know, he's still a normal kid. You know, he has a girlfriend. That's what I guess that's what families want out of their kids. I don't know. And maybe after that, we see a panel of Tate in bed, you know, just thinking again, staring off into the darkness in front of him towards the ceiling or whatever, falling asleep, and then waking up to his phone ringing.
Answer it immediately.
And it's late at night. We might catch a glimpse of it being like midnight or so. I do like midnight escapades. And you pick up and you immediately hear it. It's Mary on the other line. And she's just saying, Tate, you have to come help me. You're the only one who would. Please. And then there's this loud crashing sound and some people talking in the background. And then the line gets cut.
Oh,
she didn't tell me where she was. But yeah, I'm going to I'll see if I can find her.
I'm going to ask you both to frame the very last panels of your sections or of the comic book, however you want to do it. You guys tell me how this comic book ends. What do we see at the very end?
Problem, like, I don't know if she gave me enough information to find her.
If only you had a way of peering into the void and finding a person in this wide, wide world.
I mean, that's exactly what I'm going to do. So I'm going to, in fact, mark off one of my doom track.
No, don't mark off anything yet. Just set up the last panel.
Oh, okay. In that case, you'll see him. He'll be like, she didn't tell me where she was, but I think I still have one way to find out. And he'll do that meditation And so you'll see everything around him. It was dark, obviously, because it's the middle of the night, but it'll do that fading that it does when he uses his powers, and you'll see it glow. And then I want there to be like a little thought bubble that says, there you are.
Yeah, I think that's good.
And for Todd's, it'll be like that slash of Todd on the screen calling. You'll see Tate's name on it. I think I'm going to need backup.
If it's a full page, almost splash, but it's cut diagonally from corner to corner.
Yeah,
it's kind of how I was thinking.
Especially if you're looking down at your phone, then that would you would be the lower portion, like, oh, okay, I need backup. And then I would be in the top portion meditating with a thought bubble of like, found you.
And that's where issue number 16 of Horizon, A Story of Heroes and Hormones, concludes. And we will see how the dynamic duo deal with the Gray Ghost Syndicate next time.
Boy, are we dipping into the hormones part, though.
Boy, are we. That was chock full of hormones. Give that a nice squeeze, it'll drip.
I mean, this is what it's like. As someone in a high school now teaching 10th, 11th, and 12th grade, even remotely, you can still get it.
I remember well just coming home one night to find out that I have a girlfriend.
And then you see that it's just a street light.
Yeah, you don't see the legs twisting like, oh, senpai noticed me.
That was good, you guys. Good character stuff. I'm into it. I'm shipping you two now.
Oh, Chris is our number one fan.
Lauren is also shipping us really hard now.
Perfect. Isn't she only hearing your side of the conversation?
Yes. That's why she likes it a lot. You can see every time like I say something, she's like, oh, and like makes faces at me. Like,
that's
she's
great.
Really excited for what's going on. She doesn't know what's happening, but she knows what I'm doing. At least.
Awesome.
I love it.
Like, he can just suck in all the energy around him. That's super easy. But control is the hard part.
Sucking is big time easy. It's knowing when not to suck. That's
still phrasing, Chris. Still phrasing.
Really? Okay, yeah. You're a superhero.